All the other ones are everything else.
Good afternoon, everybody. I guess we can probably start off. Just a little bit of introduction before I go into the topic we're going to talk about today, which is how artificial intelligence is being used in the capital markets trading of securities, stocks, futures, bonds, options, and so forth. A bit of introduction for myself. I think from Monday this week, up to Monday last week, I actually work at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. I was head of infrastructure, but now I'm my portfolio says head of strategy and research and development, and also head of the trading and regulation department on the IT side. Most of what I'm going to talk about probably has no direct relationship to the JSE today, so that disclaimer is out there. We haven't yet reached the part where artificial intelligence is a very big part of the market, but prior to coming to the JSE 3 years ago, I used to work for Goldman Sachs, RBS, and Credit Suisse, where I led up the high-frequency trading technology teams, and I'm going to introduce a lot of what we did then and show where the path is as recently as 3 months ago. I think when we watch TV, we all see the picture of the stock exchange with everybody waving their hands and screaming and shouting at each other. Yes, that was a picture 20 years ago. In South Africa, the JSE got rid of its open cry trading activity close to about 20 years ago. And today, everything is done by machines. So what I have in the picture there is actually what has happened is just digitization of that open cry trading floor. In the open cry trading floor, you had somebody who works for the exchange called a specialist who took orders from everybody. And there were also some people whose jobs were called stock jobbers. That role has ceased to exist, I think, since 1986. And of course, you had the buyers and traders waving their hands. And other people were sitting wherever their offices are, and they could phone in their trades. Now, for each one of those roles, we've simply translated it into a piece of technology. So the specialist, the person who accepted the orders, is now your matching engine in the stock exchange. The stock jobbers are now your electronic market makers. The various brokers and traders who are doing that are now your trading algos that also sit in the data center. And as of about 5-10 years ago, exchanges started building these data centers, which they called liquidity centers. So instead of having a trading floor with people shouting on it, now they were building data centers. At the JSE, as of 2014, we have something called collocation, where everybody wants to be as close to the matching engine as possible. Because speed, reacting to a good offer, is of essence. This is like a poker game. It's a winner takes all. There are no prizes if you want to buy stock or you want to buy a security. There are no prizes for being in second place. You've got to be Usain Bolt. If you're not Usain Bolt, you lose. So that's the electronification and the digitization of the trading ecosystem. And of course, it's been accompanied by changes in market structure, the rules and the regulations that govern what you can do or not do. So probably if we go back to where this all began, the speed race was actually brought to the center by a trading style called high-frequency trading. This is a place where technology firms, rather than banks, actually buy and sell stock very, very fast, in nanoseconds, in microseconds, because there are sometimes differences in the price. If I bought, for example, if the price of oil was going up, it meant that probably the airlines won't make so much profit, their shares would come down. So before that information diffuses into the whole market, what you needed to do is to react and sell your airline stock, buy probably a drilling company's stock and stuff like that. So in that microsecond, few minutes, you could make a lot of money. High frequency trading itself is not a strategy as such, but it's a style you use to actually execute certain strategies in the market. And these strategies are usually market making. The best example of a market maker is the ordinary banks for foreign exchange. A market maker has to give both a quote for how much they will buy something and a quote for how much they'll sell something. So if you go to Standard Bank, FNB, you see they'll quote two prices for the dollar. One at which they'll buy from you and the other one at which they'll sell for you. That's making a market. A market is a place where you can do both buying and selling. Therefore, if you are a market maker, you are obliged to do so. You don't have to be an official market maker, but if you are an official market maker, you get rebates on the cost of your transactions. But the obligation comes with it is you must be prepared to sell a stock or buy the stock if somebody comes with it. So a little bit about those strategies. I've just been describing market maker. In fact, in jurisdictions like the US, most of Europe, Asia, Japan, for example, there are competitive exchanges that have been allowed to operate. These competitive exchanges don't usually carry primary issuance. So you can't IPO on a Chi-X, for example. You can't IPO on any of the competing dark pools and things like that. You have to IPO on the regulated exchange that looks like the JSE or the New York Stock Exchange. But other than that, trading can be done anywhere. That depends on the law. In South Africa, you can only trade stock at regulated exchanges, but in Europe, in the US, in most of Asia, you are allowed to trade in dark pools, you are allowed to trade at alternative trading venues, etc. And that brings a different dynamic for that. So the other thing that speed is necessary for is statistical arbitrage. This is what I spoke about when I talked about the price of oil going up, therefore the shares of oil companies or drilling companies will go up, the shares of airlines and other transport companies who consume that oil, because they'll have a higher cost, they'll have lower profitability, that would go up. In statistical arbitrage, you look for a statistical relationship between one security instrument and the other one. So if one moves, it's very, very likely that the other one will also move, and it will equalize soon. So the faster you get in before everybody realizes the stocks of airlines will fall or the stocks of drilling companies will go up, you go in at that price, and when it goes up, you can actually come out of that with a very neat profit. That's statistical arbitrage. And there's another form of arbitrage called latency arbitrage. In South Africa, this might come in soon. Outside the JSE, there's now A2X, which has been granted a license as an exchange. There's Zarex and probably other exchanges waiting in the sidelines. When you have more than one venue selling the same stock, prices on the two different venues would be different for a very short period of time. So you need to be able to go in very fast, buy at the venue where a stock is cheaper and sell it at a profit before the price changes where that stock is a lot more expensive, and vice versa if you are getting out of a place. So latency arbitrage is just about the speed to which you can react and the speed between you can at which you can arbitrage between two venues. And this, rather than your human being, your broker being at a bank, this was basically the purview, or it is still the purview, mostly of technology companies, which are not banks and therefore are not regulated. They have to use their own money or private money, not public money. And these guys trade for those differences only. They are not investors. They are just trying to make money out of the fact that for a very short period, there's a difference in the price of the same instrument on two different venues. So that led to who will be the fastest. And just to give an example of what kind of speeds we are talking about, in 2013 when I was with Deutsche, from the time you get the information, that's the market data comes out, okay, this stock is available, you process it through your algos and put the order on the exchange. We call it order to arc latency. We're doing 1.25 microseconds. So you have to actually imagine it's 1,000th or 1,000,000th of a second. Somebody has gone through all the prices that has come from the exchange, gone through which is the opportunity, how much should I buy, at what price should I buy it, and send the order back into the engine, 1.25 microseconds. But that was in 2013. At the time I've been here, this is another clip from the news. This is a company called Novasparks, another big technology company in the US. Their order to arc latency, getting the data from the NASDAQ backed ARCA and DAC pools and everything, feeding it in. I don't know if that's very clear. It's 70 nanoseconds. Processing in the algo and making a decision, this is a good stock to buy, putting all the information that you want, it's another 5 nanoseconds. Sending it back into the exchange so that you can actually try to buy that, another 70 nanoseconds. So their entire process, they process the entire workflow of trading a securities instrument, stock, futures, or options, takes less than 150 nanoseconds. So the need for technology is there. But however, again, I put that there just to pull it. When you are doing things at that fast rate, accidents can happen. if you go Google and you see something called in the press, it's Nightmare on Wall Street, Knight spelt with a K, because there was a company called Knight Capital Group. Knight Capital at that time basically was the counterparty of 60% of all the trades in the US. That company went bankrupt in 5 minutes. They lost $450 million in 20 minutes. And of course, they had to be taken over by another big get-go thing. So on May 6, 2010, somebody put in a strange order to trade options, and the machines started reacting against each other in a space of 20 minutes. It's called the flash crash of 2010. All the stocks dropped. Accenture, for example, dropped from a price of $200 per share to something like $1.20 per share in 5 minutes. Apple rose in that same 20 minutes from about $700 a share to over 1.2 million. Was that logical? Probably not. But the computers were just crunching the numbers and saying, I want to buy. So the fact that you're dealing in nanoseconds has an implication. None of us as human beings can analyze prices coming out of exchanges, coming out of stocks in nanoseconds, make a decision and execute that decision. So it has an implication on who can do that. In most cases, it's a machine. So the other thing that has compounded that, and I'll get to where artificial intelligence comes in now, is that although traditionally you could see the prices, I'm selling this at 20 and things like that, these days you have to do a lot more analysis than just looking at the price. So for example, you get from the trading and liquidity venues, which are basically exchanges, dark pools, and the rest, you get the price data. This one is sticking at that. People are offering at this price, 20 rand, 21 rand, 21 rand 0.5. But you also have to take into consideration the news feeds. So if our president fires the finance minister, things will go the other direction. So you actually have to do that as well. But how fast can you actually incorporate that news into the price data and come up with a price point becomes a problem. So in many cases, in many venues, Europe, US, and Asia, we get what we have, machine-readable news, so that those machines can ingest the machines and know something has happened. Otherwise, you won't be able to factor in that. There is also another piece of data you have to take in, which is sentiment. So for you as a trader, if you're not an investor has a time horizon of maybe 3 years, but the traders and the brokers are looking for best execution at the time so that they can get out if they have to. So for them, sentiment matters. If there's a rumor that Anglo-American has found another pile of gold, it's just on the surface, they'll be mining it without any cost, the price of Anglo-American will go up. Until everybody realizes that was fake news, then they can pull back. But for you as a trader, if you're a day trader, if you're an execution broker, if you bought before that rumor started and you sell when that rumor has been discredited, you've still made your money. So in that trading decision, you actually have to put in sentiment. And where are we getting this sentiment from? So Twitter feeds, blogs, and things like that. So that information also has to be taken into your algo, which does analysis, to make that decision, I'm gonna buy, or I'm gonna sell, or I'm gonna hedge. On top of that, there are a lot of, with the Internet of Things coming in, if you were selling, if you were trading, let's say, commodity futures on maize, or commodity futures on any other agricultural products, sensors that come from the Internet of Things that's showing you, okay, there's a flood over there. It shows maybe the crops will be damaged. If the crops are damaged, there'll be a shortage of that crop. What will happen? The price will go up. Then you ought to buy. So you have this big data equation now of where you have to hoover in all of this information, process it in micro or nanoseconds, and make a billion-dollar decision to make a bet or not. So sometimes you have a human there who's sitting there trying to press a button. Where I worked at Goldman Sachs, most of our traders basically had a big red button in front of them and they let the computers make the decision. Except if it was doing something that intuitively was wrong, they pressed the big red button, stop. Otherwise, they couldn't compete against the machines. But that has gone further now, just to bring into discussion. The people who actually invest are the hedge funds, your pension funds, the owners of the money, the bankers, the brokers are actually brokers, they're intermediaries acting on your behalf. But the decision to say that's what I want is usually done by the hedge funds, the mutual funds, and things like that. So these guys are now realizing the time horizon in which they have to make those trading decisions is very short. So they are now adopting artificial intelligence. One of the, in March, the world's biggest money manager, the investment fund, it's like your, probably the investment arm of Discovery or all the other Satrix, and all these other guys who do that. In the US, the 800-pound gorilla in the market is a hedge fund called BlackRock. BlackRock on March 17th, fired most of his human traders and they replaced them with machines. As today we've been hearing about Alexa, the machines they replaced them, the artificial intelligence they replaced the traders with came from Google, by the way. So Google's AI is powering BlackRock. So instead of going there, actually seeing traders going through reports, now they've got machines, you put in your pension, a machine decides where your money is going. There's another hedge fund, which is, again, in AI, in it's based in Hong Kong, called IDEA. They got rid of 100% of their human beings and just put in the machines. But one of the most telling statements from their CIO, and who's also the chief operations officer, was that even if they all died, this thing would continue trading. So they've basically made the human beings irrelevant in the process of participating in the markets and deciding how investment goes out. So the same guy, Ben from IDEA, said the whole idea of what they are trying to do is to do something no other human being, no other machine is doing. Because if you're on the poker table, you're all playing the same hands, nobody wins. In the stock markets, it's like a poker game. So it's not like you are selling shoes because I didn't sell, I go flat. If Standard Bank makes money, it means FNB had lost money because they are all playing against each other. So what they have to do in finance is to do something the other guys are not doing, as long as it doesn't lose you money, but it makes you money. And the whole thing around this is the time horizons, the amount of data you have to deal with is actually too much for a human being. So we are slowly coding the entire process. So no more waving hands, there's a machine doing something. So all of these, we see on the news, for example, that the new on Wall Street, ABC, they happen. No trading ever happens on Wall Street. All their matching engines and data center in New Jersey, in a place that has plenty of electricity and plenty of land, because these data centers consume a lot of money. Oh, sorry, a lot of power. Instead of using, to get this kind of speeds, instead of using your ordinary generic CPU, most of the calculations are done by graphical processing units, GPUs, and FPGAs is the order of the game. So you have people who code the logic and people who do infrastructure converging, because now you have to code your entire trading logic, your algorithm, in a piece of hardware, because in most cases, hardware is faster than software. So is this a new thing, or it's a fad that's going away? So when BlackRock replaced their traders with machines, I did a little Google search to see what has happened. But it wasn't just BlackRock. Went and looked at a whole slew of the kind of firms that deal with stock exchanges. And there were a lot of them who had actually changed from using human beings to actually make those stock picking investment decisions to a machine doing that. And these machines have something called reinforcement learning or deep learning. So basically they'll go into the stock market, maybe they'll play a few hands loose, but they keep training themselves to be even faster, to make better decisions. And a human being in the next 4 or 5 years rarely has a place in that. There are some trading instruments, for example, bonds. Most bonds are still traded by human beings because they are such complex instruments that, and they have relationships built into them. So, but for the cash markets, which is stocks, ETFs, and anything that can be traded in the same way as cash, commodities, options, futures, hardly any human touch is involved in that. So just to give you an idea of how many of the firms, these are some of the world's largest trading firms. Even the banks are going the same way. They do have the money to go and buy the best data scientists they can find, the best programmers of both hardware and software. And because they've got them, okay, I'm seeing a time up there. So basically, that's where the industry is going. All of these guys have now incorporated artificial intelligence into their trading workflows. There is very little room for human interaction. So what we have to do is to be the guys who write these artificial intelligence programs rather than be the guys who trade. Didn't realize 20 minutes was that short.